Welcome to the Edge Shift podcast with Katie Novak.
Really around this idea of like research and strategies and people doing interesting things.
And Chris Astle.
Doing what's best for kids, like putting kids at the center.
Our goal at EdShift is to dive into educational trends and practices and to connect you with educators and innovators around the world who are committed, in subtle and in grand ways, to shifting the fabric of education. Check out the show notes for ways to connect with us and our guests.
We have a great podcast in store for everyone today. This was a great session to sit down and talk about, you know, how do we do the right things for students and how do we think about learning as more of an experience instead of something that we kind of teach directly to our kids. And so diving into, you know, learning about our students, learning what they value, and a lot of things that really get us connected to our students. I think you are really going to enjoy what we have in store for you today.
Amazing. Let's dive in. Really excited about today's guest on the EdShift podcast, someone that I've known for quite a few years now, have the privilege of working with and even meeting in person a couple of times. Join me in welcoming Gabriel Carrillo, who you may know as EdTech Bites on his own podcast and across the internet. Gabriel is passionate about all things EdTech and all things food, but I don't want to steal his thunder. So Gabriel, I'll pass it over to you to give a bit of your own introduction. Welcome to the EdShift podcast.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Katie. And I just want to thank you guys, both of you, Chris and Katie, for allowing me to be a part of your show. I do listen to the show and I'm honored and pleased to be here to not only just share our passions, but to connect. You know, so I am instructional technology specialist, ed tech specialist, 21st century coach, digital learning coach, whatever your district calls it, whatever your state, province, county, whatever they call it, I'm that. And I've been doing this for over 10 years in two different states, and I'm now in San Antonio, Texas. And you did mention, Katie, a little while ago that ed tech bites. So one of my passions is, you know, well, actually two of my passions, my two biggest passions are educational technology and education and food. Not only, you know, when people think of food, they think of foodies who go out and eat all the time. Yeah, don't really do that too much. I prefer to come home with and for the family. So that's one of the things that I'm really passionate about is taking what our parents, our aunts, uncles, grandparents showed us and maybe showed us without technically showing us, that down to future generations. Because I'm sorry, Uber Eats and all that stuff. Great ideas. But there's nothing like going to the kitchen, cooking up a meal for and with your family and knowing that your kids and your loved ones now have that ability to do on their own as well. Self-sufficiency, a lot of S's in there.
I love that. That's my favorite part of the day too, Gabriel. It's kind of like work winds down. Both my husband and I work from home. We migrate to the kitchen, open some wine, start cooking together. And you're right. There's just something about that connection. I still haven't figured out how to get my daughter to eat it. So you're ahead of me there, but.
Yeah, I love how much overlap there is with the idea of cooking at home and of teaching the next generation and of what you do in your professional role in terms of ed tech, in terms of powering and creating tech fluency in kids in the same way that you're teaching, you know, the next generation to cook. I love how much overlap there is there that one might not necessarily see on the surface.
Yeah, and it's literally all about modeling. I mean, if you go to a classroom, any grade level, pick a grade level, pick a content area, pick an ability level, whatever. You can't teach, when you're talking about direct teaching, you cannot get the point across without good modeling. Well, the same goes in life, in the kitchen, and anywhere. I can't show my kids how to make something, how to properly make sure that the pasta is al dente and not overcooked without modeling. Might not be teaching them, but I didn't necessarily learn things in the kitchen by my mom telling me this is how you do. The first step is you do this. No, a lot of that stuff I just saw. And I saw it so many times over and over. Like, for example, one of the big things that, you know, one of my absolute favorite things in the world to eat is rice. It's just plain, simple Spanish rice. It's what I grew up eating with damn near every meal. It was affordable, it's cheap, and it goes a long way. And my mom didn't necessarily show me how to make it. She would ask me to help every once in a while. And before I knew it, I learned how to make it without the direct teach piece, but through the modeling and seeing it done over and over. As a matter of fact, not sure if you guys know this, but I'm in the middle of writing a book, and I got a book deal about a year and some change ago. And
amazing.
Thank you. I would have loved for this bad boy to be done, but I do have two teenagers who are both in competitive marching band at a very high performing high school. And that takes a lot of our time and resources. So it's kind of, writing this book has been kind of on the back burner for right now, but I will be getting it done hopefully before ISTE. So the book is all about cooking up experiences in the classroom. Stop creating lessons and start creating experiences. And it's kind of a cookbook also, all in one. With a lot of analogies on, like, for example, that rice analogy that I gave is actually one of the chapters that I talk about. I'm not going to get too much into it because
no spoilers. Yeah.
But it's literally about modeling and everything that you're doing and something as a lesson for it to come across. Most of the things that we remember, whether it be from school, whether it be from knowing how to change oil in a car or something, is not necessarily from teach, but it's because you have an experience that's tied to that. So that's the majority of your learning from. And that's literally what it's all about. I mean, you take it to any profession, especially in teaching, and it's all about modeling and experiences. And if we can't create experiences for our kids, then they're done for. We just put them through an assembly line, basically, which is not exactly good teaching. So,
and that's what I love about your analogy there with cooking too, because, you know, as you talk about learning how to make rice and not having it be a step-by-step process, the door has automatically been open for creativity and adaptation. And when you remember pieces of it, you take the things that stuck with you and then you maybe add something new to it, or you try something new, or you iterate. And so it makes for brilliant cooking. And it makes for really engaged students in the classroom too. So I really like the way you frame that up. I'm going to remember that one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing that my mom never did when she made her rice is she never threw us. I mean, one of the first steps when making Spanish rice, what we now know as Spanish rice, is you brown the rice in some sort of oil, you know, toast it up so that you get that nutty fragrance. And that's the cue to say, add liquid. At this point, you know, if it's too late, you've burned it, then guess what? It's like making a roux. When you burn a roux, that's it. It's a wrap. You got to start over. Same thing with rice. And that's one of the things that you do, is you add to it. So my mother never threw a serrano pepper in the oil when she was toasting it. Before toasting it, I do, because I thought, hey, I like spice. So I didn't necessarily change the recipe. I added to it. And if... It's all about adaptation and taking it to the next level. +1, +1, +1. So.
Love that. That's yeah. I always think, you know, we want to make the next generation smarter and more prepared and, you know, better equipped than we ever were, you know, whether that's the way they use emerging technology or, you know, adding serrano pepper to your Spanish rice oil. either way, right?
Yeah.
I think that that leads into one of the questions that we wanted to explore with you today, Gabriel, in terms of the right tools for teachers as we head into, you know, not necessarily a new school year for most, but a new calendar year, which always has that fresh start, that look ahead, you know, 12 months of 2023 ahead of us. What do you think are the most important tech tools that a teacher needs to have in their toolbox in 2023?
All right. So for me, the most important tools that a teacher needs to have are a suite of tools that can do it all. For example, my district is a Google Workspace district. I can teach with Google Slides for 1 month straight, 20 days, you know, 20 instructional days, and do something completely different with slides. I can direct teach with them. I can have the students do a warm-up through them. I can have students do an exit ticket. I can have students collaborate on the slide. I can have them modify an existing slideshow. I can have them critique. I can have them comment. I could do all that stuff with one tool. So I think whatever suite of tools that your district has prepared for you, and more than likely you're either a Google Workspace district or you're a Microsoft district or you're both, because there's a lot of districts that have both. You know, they have Outlook and for email and Active Directory and things like that. And they also have the Google tools, because that's primarily what a lot of the districts, at least in our area, have. And that plays really, really well with, you know, 179 devices that are called Chromebooks that all districts can afford and can outfit for their student population. So any suite of tools that can do it all. And when I say do it all, I mean, look at the four C's: critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity. So when you look at those four things and you start asking yourself as an educator, what am I not doing? If I was to break down these four C's, how deep are you getting into the content? How, when you start looking at that and really taking a step back and you start looking at things that you're not necessarily strong at, you know, I'm really good with maybe having my students collaborate. They collaborate three or four times a week, but they don't really have the time. I've never really given them the time to be creative, to maybe show me their learning in their own way. So taking a look at your tools that you have available to you, taking a look at the four C's, the reality of what their world is. I'm going to say, I say it a lot, and I'm going to say it here on your guys' show as well, is we need to make sure that we're preparing students for their world, not ours. Our world is ours. The world of email, the world of how we go about doing things, that's not their future. Their future is going to be a lot different. They might not even ever touch email in 20 years. Everything will be run through Slack. It'll be run through Teams. It'll be run through GroupMe or something like that. They might not even be typing, and it might all be speech to text. So we need to make sure that we're preparing our students for their future, not necessarily ours. So when you start looking at the four C's, the tools that you have available, you need to start asking yourself, do I really know how to incorporate these four or five given tools at any time with any of the four C's or anything that I know is going to be a critical, soft, or hard skill that these students are going to need to know in the next X amount of years? And if the answer is no, which is perfectly fine, none of us are perfect. There is no perfect educator. There is no educator out there, at least that I know of, that is rocking every single thing that the students need to know in a high engaging, high, I hate this word, but high rigor environment all the time. We're not, it just doesn't happen. We're human. That's why pencils have erasers. We make mistakes. So I think looking at that, acknowledging the weak points and acknowledging points of growth, that's where we could start taking those tools and really, really start digging into them. I love Sheets. I'm a Sheets nerd. I love data. I like looking at data. People in my department and people that I know outside of work will hit me up all the time. I know that there's a way that you can make this spreadsheet do that. I don't know how to do it, or I've been battling with the formula or whatever. So they'll make a copy, send it to me, and I'll play. I take it as a challenge accepted, you know, kind of thing. So I know.
Duly noted, just for the record.
Right. I am making a note there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that I'm really good at that, but you know, I'm not really good with making my documents, whether they be my word processing documents, whether it be a Google Doc or Microsoft Word doc file document. I'm not really good at making, you know, so they're not very enticing to the eyes. They're not, what's the word, aesthetically pleasing to the eyeballs. So I need to work on that, you know, because that's, you know, we eat with our eyes first. If it looks enticing, if the document, if the assignment, the instructions, the template that the teacher has provided for me, if it looks nice and it looks appealing to me, I'm probably going to pay more attention to it. So once you can knock that stuff out of the park, then you could start looking at other tools. We tend to get a little tool heavy and using tools for the sake of using tools rather than what is it my students need right now. So whatever platform that you your district uses, Microsoft, Google, if you use some sort of open source platform or what have you, do it really, really well and know it in and out and start learning the different ways to use those particular tools that you have available to you before you start looking at some of the other stuff. That's what I would say to any educator out there.
And what I really like about that is you've kind of brought it back to what you started with, like the ideal of modeling. So we're modeling how to do things. Like when we're teaching students directly or when we're teaching cooking, it's how to do. And when we're stretching ourselves and analyzing how we can do things differently, then we're modeling that process of how to learn and how to try new things and how to iterate. And I like that, that you start at this base level and grow there in front of your students. And then you can start adding the exciting things, which is kind of my next question to jump in there too. When you're thinking about this from the teacher's lens, is there a space to think it differently from the student lens? Like, how do we get students to maybe bring in things teachers are unfamiliar with? And I'm totally derailing the conversation with that, but I couldn't help thinking about it when you were talking. Like, how do we build the space for teachers? And then when we're thinking about the world that our students are going into, which is so iterative and will very likely be so related on what they can uniquely bring to the situation, like, is there a space for that when you start adding tools?
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing what we can learn from our students if we give them a voice and we actually listen to the things that they bring to the table. You could learn a lot from your students. You can learn a lot of, from what they value. One of my key objectives at my professional 9 to 5, 8 to 4:30, I should say, is, you know, coaching teachers, working with teachers in building efficacy in the classroom, you know, building teacher rigor. That way they have, you know, they can show their students that they have value and meaning in the work that the students are doing. So with that, there's a lot of questioning. There's a lot of back end stuff that we as coaches have to do. And one of the main questions is, what do your students value? What is important to them? And not every class period, if you're secondary, not every class period is going to be the same. There are some class periods where they value working on their own. They enjoy independent work. There are some that are really into pop culture. Some class periods, I could think of one particular class with a teacher that I was working with just this past fall. She had a class period that was into gaming, and I'm talking Dungeons and Dragons and Minecraft. They were into that. We heard them. They pitched us an idea for a project, a semester-long project. So we took that idea. Her and I sat down, we scaffolded, we broke it down. We thought with the end in mind, you know, let's take the TEKS, the standards that you have to teach, what these students need to know for the exam at the end of the year and for the overall, you know, to make sure we check all the boxes from your syllabus. What do they need to know? So we took that, we incorporated all the stuff. She didn't know a lot about Minecraft and gaming and that. I know some from my kids here at home. And then we had a standing weekly meeting and we sat down, and after about 3.5 weeks, we planned what we thought would be a great idea. They took it. The students loved it. They added to it. They, oh, can we do this? Can we do that? You know, there are a couple of students who are, regardless, they might not do the work, but for the most part, we built something for them with them. We got their input. We wanted to know what they value. What is an engaging piece for them? What is something of interest to them that we can possibly tie into the curriculum? So it's amazing what we can learn from our students if we give them a chance to share their voice, their likes, their dislikes, and maybe have them prepare a possible outcome for us. Did that answer your question?
Yes. No, I love that. There, yeah.
Second, I was like, okay, I think I did. All right.
No, yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. Like, how do we let the students drive the learning? And, you know, by being so open to that and letting them, again, like, add to it as they developed it with you, like, that is the recipe for engaged students, because again, they own it, they're interested in it, it has meaning to them.
And they have buy-in. It's like the movie Inception. You know, once you plant that seed in their head, it becomes theirs.
Inception. I love that reference.
I saw that movie.
It's been a minute. Maybe that would be a good rewatch, actually. It's been a minute since I watched that. I wrote down that line of like, what do your students value? Like it feels almost basic, because it is, but I don't think we ask that question in that way enough. We know what we want them to value. Yeah. We know what we want them to know.
I want you a 500-word essay by the end of the... No.
Yeah.
You have to know what they value, what they like, what they dislike.
Yeah. What do they value? What advice would you give to an educator, you know, classroom teacher heading into a new year? She's like, how do I tap into that? How do I tap into that for littles? How do I tap into that for high school students that don't want to tell me anything? What kind of advice do you have for helping teachers dig into that with and for their students?
That's a great question. The first two things that I would ask are you subscribed to the EdShift and EdTech Bytes podcast? Those would be my start, young lady. That's where you need to start. I would definitely say, what have you done so far to know a little bit more about your students and what they value? And I would not be thrown off by wait time, because it'll get awkward. But that is when the real thinking and the cognition really comes into play. If they think for a really long time, more than likely the answer is probably, I haven't done anything, or I haven't done much, but I don't want to tell this guy. After that, I would definitely say, hey, you know, I'm not here to judge, I'm here to help. You know, and I'm not necessarily talking as a teacher, I'm talking as what I do in my everyday 8 to 4:30 as an educator. And it's only after that, after they are 100% transparent with me, saying, you know, I haven't done much. Well, okay, how about we do a warm-up, or how about we do some sort of activity that'll take no more than about 7 or 8 minutes at the beginning of class? And it's going to have nothing to do with the lesson. I mean, we could intentionally build something into it that is anticipatory set, you know, going to build off of what you're going to be teaching today. But let's not be steered by that. Let's just get to know our kids. And it could be an activity. You know, one of the warm-ups I do when I do some model teaching or co-teaching in the classrooms is, Chris, do you guys have Whataburger out there?
We do not.
You do not. Do you have In-N-Out?
We do not.
Oh,
man. I know. It's a desert. What can I say?
Wait, I'm reneging on ever visiting you now, Chris. What the heck?
Come on. We have plenty to offer here. Just not that.
Katie, have you had Whataburger?
I have. I love Whataburger. Big fan.
Had In-N-Out.
I have had In-N-Out also.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay. All right. Shots fired. Okay. I definitely, I take In-N-Out over Whataburger any day, but that's, you know, whatever. But being in Texas, you know, Whataburger rules here. And, you know, I'll go into to co-teach or model teach with the teacher or for the teacher. And, you know, we're going to do something. If you don't mind, let me come in tomorrow. I'll do a little warm-up activity. And the only thing I want you to do is take notes. Not of what I'm doing. Take notes on your students, what they're saying, how they're interacting with each other, and any ahas that come out. And I'll come in and I'll say, okay, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do an activity this morning. My name is Mr. Creo. You guys probably see me around campus. But I have a question for you. If you prefer Whataburger, I want you to stand on this wall. If you prefer In-N-Out, stand and get over here on this side. They'll do that. Usually the Whataburger side's really big. There's only like maybe two or three on the In-N-Out side. Okay. Whatever wall you're on, whatever team you are, talk amongst each other, pick a partner, maybe two or three of you, talk about why you love Whataburger. Give a couple examples. Same thing over here on the In-N-Out side. You know, they're doing their thing and they're excited because it has nothing to do with academics. It's all personal. And you know, the teacher, I can think of one particular lesson I did with the students. The teacher was like, holy cow, I've never heard this young lady talk. I've never heard that student be so passionate about anything that has ever come up in my classroom. And then after that, okay, we're going to meet in the middle of the room. Let's respectively walk to the middle of the room. And one of you is going to, on the Whataburger side, you guys, one of you is going to say your piece on why you think Whataburger is superior to In-N-Out. In-N-Out, you guys are going to listen in. You're going to listen with intentions on listening. You're not waiting for your turn to speak. You are going to listen. And then you are going to refute with one of your facts. And it turned into a friendly back and forth and all that. But the teacher is taking notes on this all the time and learned that there are a couple of students who don't eat meat. There are a couple of students who are allergic to the bread or a particular ingredient at one of the restaurants. And there are students who she did not know or he did not know that work at one of them. And they now know that information. And then we, you know, we'll go back to our seats. We go about doing our thing. But she now is armed with that information. And if we do a couple of those, like maybe one or two a week, and you start learning about what your students like and dislike and what they become passionate about, some of them are, you could do that same activity on paper or in a Google Doc or in a Word document in Teams or what have you, or in the portfolio in Microsoft. And you can have the students write about it. And you will find that maybe some of your students who are not necessarily passionate about writing can speak really well in you know, the activity where they get against the wall. And you'll find vice versa. Students who are always talking in class might, or not necessarily talking a lot in class, they can write and really get their point across using text. So when you start learning those things, you could start taking what you know about your students and using it to your advantage with how they prove their learning to you in different ways. And it's okay that students A, B, and C show it in one example with one way, and students D, E, and F do it in another one, and a whole group of students do it in a completely different medium in a group. And that's perfectly fine. At the end of the day, you have to be responsible for being able to check those boxes. Did I get these point across with these particular students? Do they know how to do A, B, and C and apply D, E, and F based on the activities that we've done in the classroom? So that's what I would definitely say to a teacher is ask yourself if you've ever done anything like that to get to know your students. And if not, that's okay. Number two is maybe start incorporating some activities into the classroom that have nothing to do with education to get them to arm yourself with the knowledge of what your students like and what they value. And there is probably somebody at your district or your school or your campus that can help you facilitate, like a coach or a specialist or somebody. But more than likely, your district has some sort of people to help out with that, a whole team or department. And that's where we can come in and help with that as well. That was a really long answer to your question. I apologize.
It was a really good answer, though.
But yeah, exactly. It was a good one. And the point that you highlighted there, too, is like, because I think sometimes we go into the new year and we want to do things differently. And we're like, okay, well, what is the thing that I need to do that? And what you just illustrated was actually nothing. You're using all of the tools that you have already. So you're not having to do two things at once. You're focusing on getting to know your students within the confines of the technology and the tools you already have in the classroom. And I think that just lowers the barrier to entry and hopefully encourages a bunch of teachers to try some fun stuff in the new year.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe show up to Whataburger or In-N-Out where you know that student works, and you can start, you know, hey, I saw you at Whataburger the other day. Great job. I read your paper. Oh my gosh, I was blown away by that. That is going to move mountains with your students. So
wait. Teachers exist outside of schools
and they eat.
Oh my gosh, who knew?
Yeah, right. I remember the first time I saw one of my teachers out. Wait a minute, that's not right. You're supposed to be at the school, buddy. Come yeah. on, what are you doing?
Yes. But the more you know, I love the idea of that, you know, interaction that a student sees the teacher as a more whole person, as well as teachers understanding their students a little bit better. I think both of that, that authenticity, that, you know, real humanness, that bringing of our whole identities to the classroom, whoever we are, teacher, student, coach, everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
So important. Well, I think we have set off our listeners with some fantastic advice to start off the school year. Gabriel, is there anything else that you want to share, tips, tricks, thoughts, as we launch into 2023?
That sounds crazy. 2023, I would have never imagined. That is literally a week, something like that, right?
Right.
Oh. Well, yeah, you know, one of my... Stop creating lessons and start creating experiences. That's my big one. That's my big one. We get a lot more out of experiences. Our students get more out of experiences, both in and out of the classroom. And an experience, a great experience to one might not necessarily be a great experience to the other, but our students do deserve a chance and an opportunity to make that call, whether it was great or not. We need our students coming home saying, my mouth is dry, my throat hurts, because I did so much communicating and talking with people at school. We need to have our teachers stopping from coming home saying, my throat and my mouth are dry because I was at the front of the classroom speaking all period long and reading my 235 slideshow. I'm sorry, my taxpayers, my taxpaying dollars should not pay for that. If that's the case, then put it on autoplay and have them do it on their own and go get a job somewhere else. I want a world where our students are pushed to do plus one, whatever it is that their ability level is, bring it up a notch, that's, and make it in reach, but where they have to work for it. I want our students to be well-rounded in the arts and communication with the four C's and everything. And I want students to be prepared for their world, not ours. I want our students to know the ins and outs of crypto, of digital assets and things that are going to shift and make their world, not necessarily ours. I'm sorry, kids don't even know how to balance a checkbook. That's stuff from our generation. That's stuff that we do. That's not them. We just need to make sure that we're preparing our students for their world, not necessarily ours. And on that note, just keep cooking with your family and your friends and your loved ones, because that's where a lot of that experience comes from as a teacher. Happy teachers make happy classrooms.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gabriel, similar to how you like to end your shows, with a very specific question for anyone who hasn't listened to EdTech Bites, you're going to have to go and listen to Gabriel's podcast to see what his ending question often is for his guests. Gabriel, we want to know on EdShift today, what's been the best part of your day so far?
Waking up with my wife and my kids, being able to cook with my wife, for my wife, for our kids, and just hanging out at home. It's just so nice to have an agenda without having an agenda. That is by far the best thing. You know, who knows? We might do a little shopping in a little bit. We might not. Does it matter? No, because We're here creating experiences together with one another. So what more do you want? Just being here at home with my loved ones, that makes everything, it's warm and fuzzy. I know it's cliche, but that's part of my day. I'm not going to lie.
Love it.
Warm and fuzzy is good. We like warm and fuzzy.
Especially negative 35, right?
Details. Yeah. Details, I know. Awesome. Thank you, Gabriel, so much for being here. We will include all of the links down in the show notes, but let our listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is edtechbytes.com. My social medias are basically all edtech at edtechbytes. So you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. You could do a simple search for EdTechBytes on YouTube, and I've got some cooking tutorials and EdTech how-tos. I've got more on the way as well. Book will be releasing hopefully mid next year, 2023. So make sure you are on the lookout for that. And I will also be presenting at TCEA, FETC, as well as ISTE as of today. So find me out there, connect with me. I'd love to connect with you and grow my PLN and hopefully be a part of your PLN as well.
Super exciting. I think we might just have to have you back for another discussion once your book is out and we get a chance to read it and invite you back. So we will look forward to that.
Person though.
Thanks for listening to the EdShift podcast. If you love the show, leave us a review. If you don't love it, let us know how we can make it better for you. You can connect with us by email or on social media anytime. Remember to check the show notes for resources, links, and connections with our guests, along with bonus lesson content connected to each episode's conversation. Thanks for being here and connecting with us.